You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to my guest, Pooja Bakai. Sometimes when I interview guests, it's about intentional changes and decisions that they make in their lives. And other times my guests are making decisions because of what the extreme circumstances are that are showing up in their lives. Pooja and I talk about how a health diagnosis turned her life upside down. And just for fun, we also talk about mangoes. So that's in there too. Are you ready? Because I'm definitely ready. So let's go. Pooja Bakai, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting.
Thanks, Amy.
I'm so glad you're here. Are you ready for a chat?
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. So I start almost all of my interviews by asking people where they are. So do you mind sharing with us where on this world planet you're talking to me from today?
Sure. I'm in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Very nice. And you're wearing a jacket. It looks like it's cold in Raleigh today. I'm further south than you, but we had a little bit of a chill in the air today. So we are recording this in February. It's cold. All right. Before we dig into the topic of the day, I would love to get to know you a little bit better. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself outside of work, maybe some of the important people in your life, what you do for hobbies, anything you want to share that's just a little bit about you as a person?
Sure. Let's see. I'm currently married, recently married.
Congratulations.
Thank you. The love of my life, one of the loves of my life. And we have a dog who, Matthew, this is the name of my husband, he rescued our pup from Ecuador. And I actually met Matthew and Yema, our dog, in Ecuador. And maybe the listeners will get to hear a little bit about that during our chat today. But yeah, I'm just so grateful to have had the experience of traveling the world with them, and to have landed here and building a home and enjoying, you know, the daily simplicities of life together.
That is spectacular. I love Ecuador. I think it's a great place. So that is very cool. Okay, so now we're going to get to the topic that you proposed for the day, which is how your life changed when you got what is really a pretty significant health diagnosis when you were only 29 years old. Does that sound like something worth talking about?
I think so.
I think so too. All right. Let's begin by telling people a little bit about what your life was like when you were 29. What was going on for you before all this happened?
I was very different than I am now. I was living in Boston, well, specifically Cambridge, Massachusetts, and I was a PhD student at Harvard University. So I was basically just working my ass off in class, teaching. I was teaching some classes. I was actually studying how teachers of color navigate like institutions serving in their schools and how they navigate the policies there to best meet the needs of their students. And I came to all that because I was a teacher myself. So yeah, that's a little grounding for
Very
the
good. So
pre-diagnosis.
And let's put it a little bit in a timeline. How long ago was that, or like how far back was that?
That was in 2019.
2019. Okay. So to put it a little bit of time. So you were doing your PhD program and you had already been a teacher. I was curious about that. What I wanted to talk about there was how long had you been thinking about that career path? Like how invested were you? I mean, nobody just falls into a doctoral program at Harvard. So my guess is that this was something that you had put a lot of time and energy into getting to that point. But talk to us about how long you'd had this dream of finishing that degree.
Well, I got to be totally honest with you here.
Okay.
I would say my path in academia was something like I went to Stanford for undergraduate and I was like valedictorian of my high school class. So that, like, my path in academia was definitely something I had been working towards for a very long time since I was probably a kid. And no, not probably, but since I was a kid. And I would say with the doctorate specifically, this was a really interesting case because while I feel like so many of my peers and most people who did end up in the program had perhaps been working towards it as a goal for a long time, I always tried to plan out my life, but it really never seemed to work out for me. Like in my undergraduate, I was studying to become a doctor of medicine, and then I
Okay.
decided I didn't want to go to medical school. And I ended up working, like I got a postgraduate fellowship to work in public service. I ended up cho choosing UN Women. So I worked there for a year. And then I just went on another adventure and I was a community organizer. I lived in India. I worked with a nonprofit there. And I came back and that's when I started teaching because service was really the through line for me from the jump. That was sort of like my North Star. And I was just trying to find a place for me, Pooja, to help people in a way that felt good, in a way that felt exciting, empowering, inspiring for me, and real, where I felt like it was genuine change that I was seeing. Not just for myself, I mean, not just for like the people that I was connecting with, but also like something that I felt from within. Felt connected to from within. So, yeah, that's how teaching was born. And I ended up teaching what I was teaching was biology. So I used
Okay.
my undergraduate degree in biology to teach. And while I was teaching, I was just having some amazing, amazing moments and building amazing relationships and just noticing so many things about the schools that I was working in and not just the ones I was working in, but really a lot of different types of schools because I got around. I was in a lot of professional development programs. I would talk to a lot of teachers working in different environments, and I always wanted to be a mom too. So I was just really curious about like what is going on here in schools, and it was a different perspective for me when I was a teacher than when I was a student, and I wasn't really thinking about the system and how it was affecting young people more broadly. So when I was a teacher, I was basically just like, I came to this moment where I was just very feeling very like suffocated is the best word I can put it, put to it, working in schools. And I was aware of a lot of the policies and the systems that were governing what we could and couldn't do in our classrooms as teachers. And also just, you know, just simple things like my students had to walk through a metal detector to get to learn, you know, to learn. And it was just sad. It started feeling like a prison. And I was like, there has to be something out there that's that feels and is more liberating, more empowering, more fun. Like there's got to be a better way to do this. And so yeah, that's like what brought me to the PhD. And I think I was a really unique case because I hadn't done like a research-based master's or anything. But yeah, it's a long story, but I figured why not share?
No, I think that, and I love that I was wrong because I didn't know how you ended up there. And even when you started telling that, when you started and you said I was originally studying in an MD program or pre-MD program, that would not have been as surprising to me. Like, so that's sort of what I was, but I think that that's a really powerful story and it's actually really important. And then can I clarify what level were you teaching biology? Was it high school? High school, yeah.
High school.
So, and I think there's a lot of stuff in there. So I can see the through line of service because that is what pushes some people into the idea of medicine. I think you were an early adopter that you were empowered to make that decision before you were like a resident, because I've met a lot of people who get all the way through and then they're like, yeah, no, I don't really actually want to do this. And then you've got, you're finished. It's harder to retool at that point. And so then to back off and do the other things you did through the UN and through the other things, that does make sense. And teaching is a really unique thing. I've never been a teacher. I always thought that teaching looked like it was really, really hard. When I was a student, I was like, that looks hard. Everybody on my side is giving this person a hard time. I'm very confused why anybody would choose that as a profession. But I know lots of people who did choose it as a profession who really love it. It is a weird combination of service and skill, and it's within its own system, which makes it,
Yes.
it's a really challenging thing. So when we talk about systemic changes, education's a weird example because it is its own culture.
For
It is
sure.
its own culture. Yeah. So that's, anyway, I went off on a tangent, but that
Love
was,
it.
I was curious about that to do that. So you're 29 years old. You've got a pretty significant amount of life experience. You've already made some changes and you're clearly highly motivated, highly intelligent. You can get stuff done and maybe a little bit competitive since you're choosing challenging academic programs. I don't know if you would describe yourself as that. What was going on with your health that got you into the doctor's office for an exam? Like, tell us how this started.
You know, this is an interesting question too, because obviously the doctors asked me that. And back then, when I would walk into a doctor's office and somebody would ask me like, "So what's been going on?" Like, and they would ask me not just about what brought me in that day, but my life, like my health history. I'd be like, "Oh yeah, I've been a healthy person. Like, you know, I've been good. Not this is a new thing. You know, I just tell people like this is a new thing." And I mean, since then, as I've worked a lot on my health and had more time to reflect and process, I realize I've had like chronic health issues that were leading up to this diagnosis, since I was also a child, but they were so overlooked and just sort of made out to be nothing, and there was never any like. There were diagnoses, but there was really never any cure or any talk of like addressing the issues. So I just sort of like pretended. I had convinced myself that I was like healthy. And it wasn't that hard to do because I know this sounds crazy, but it wasn't hard to do because I was an athlete. I was
Yeah.
running marathons. I was teaching yoga, and I felt like I was doing all the right things, putting right in quotes, like eating healthy and having a balanced life. Just stuff that whatever I knew back then to do, I was doing it. And I was like, yeah, so I'm healthy and I'm good. But yeah, so to answer your question, when I was a child, or in my younger years, in my teens, even in my tw early 20s, I had things like acne, like
Okay.
cystic acne, IBS, like really bad IBS, like really bad digestive issues and bloating. And like sometimes I just wouldn't even be able to eat because I was like, I had a lot of pain in my stomach. What else? Just like these, asthma. I had asthma when I was a kid. I was like
Okay.
diagnosed when I was like 5.
Okay.
It sort of went away, I guess. But I would have like allergic reactions to things randomly. I went through a couple years where I couldn't eat like a ton of foods. I had to cut out a lot of different foods. And so there was just like this, there was this undercurrent, but I didn't identify as somebody who had health issues. Like I just would sort of try to deal with them and adapt and move on.
Yeah, and it sounds like your baseline of normal
Yes.
was you were used to it.
Exactly.
You were used to it. And so that's an interesting,
Some context.
that's some context, right? So
Yeah.
for example, yeah, absolutely. Okay, so then
So then I have one more thing I just want to share
tell
really
it, go for it,
quickly,
go for it.
because I know your question was like, what brought me in that day?
Yes, like what were you feeling? Like what were your symptoms?
And it was
Or was it a checkup?
no, it wasn't a checkup. I had had a checkup and it did have blood results that did point to this diagnosis, but they weren't acknowledged either. Anyways, this was just I went in because I had this cough that wouldn't go away, and it wasn't like the kind of cough you have when you're sick, like when you have a cold or the flu or something like that. It was like a dry cough. And I also had swelling on one side of my neck that wouldn't go away. And that was definitely strange. Like, that's something I have definitely never had before. And that's what I had a partner at the time, my boyfriend at the time, he told me, like, Pooja, this
This
is
is
not
not
looking good.
normal.
This is not looking good. You gotta go in. I was like, fine. So that's what brought me in.
Okay. So,
And I was feeling like crap.
and so you
I
were
was
feeling
feeling
pretty
like crap.
bad. You were
Yeah.
feeling pretty bad. Okay, so if we haven't already talked about it, which we haven't, do you want to share what the diagnosis was that you got? Like what
Sure.
type of like so go ahead and tell us what was the news that you got after you, and it probably was not, I'm guessing it was not like immediate because that's just not the way the medical system works. You rarely go in and it's not like ordering a hamburger where you're like they're like, "Welcome and here are your results."
You're right about that. It was interesting because they ended up doing a chest X-ray at my like at this exam. It was a student health, so it was like a very
Okay.
basic, like a checkup sort of environment where I went in. And yeah, they requested a chest X-ray because I think the doctor, the resident, it was actually a resident. Interesting, you were talking about residents. I got to see a resident because it was like a last minute appointment. That's the only opening they had, and she requested this chest X-ray because I think she suspected cancer.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, because she did a full physical exam, and I think she noticed that my lymph node was swollen here, and her, I don't know. I think she just like was really good at deduction. She had done a good job like as a resident, and
That's amazing.
I was really, really happy about that because who knows if it was somebody else. Anyways, the chest X-ray showed like a huge mass in my chest. It was extremely large and unavoidably obvious. Like it was so obvious that they actually were like almost 100% positive. Like you have cancer. It's probably lymphoma. That's what it looks like from this X-ray. But obviously, you have to get a what's it called? Biopsy to check. So then, when they did the biopsy, they confirmed it was the diagnosis was stage 4B lymphoma.
All right, so I'm going to ask you this, which I think you, if you're not comfortable answering this, which it's, I bet you are actually from now that we've talked, but when I wrote the question, I wasn't sure if you would be. Talk a little bit about, for the people listening, what that combination of words means, stage four. So it's like hurricanes. It's like we rank these illnesses in terms of stages, but what does stage four mean?
Yeah, it's so wild. Yeah, there's four stages, I guess, with cancer diagnoses, as far as I know. And
That was what I found in my Googling, so I think that's right.
okay, I was like, I don't
Okay.
know if that's just for lymphoma or for every cancer, but I figured, good, we're on the same page. So yeah, there's at least with lymphoma, there's four stages, and stage four is the last stage, and then they actually group it into 4A and 4B. And they're one of the big differentiation, like the differentiating line between 4A and 4B is whether the cancer has spread, at least in lymphoma, like into the bone. If it's
Okay.
spread into the bone, and that means it's also below, like it's also on the lower half of your body. For me, it was both. Like I had it on the lower half of my body, it had spread into the bone. And which is such a weird thing for me to even like visualize now, but I saw it on the scan, so I was able to see like how it had really spread like throughout a lot of different parts of my body. And so yeah, I got that 4B, and there are some other things that put you in the 4B category, like night sweats, which I was having a lot of, but of course I didn't think that it was like a symptom. I didn't know.
Right. Well,
And
it can be
yeah.
night sweats, can be
Yeah,
anything. It can be you
anything.
have too much spicy food, you
Exactly.
drank too much red wine, you're in menopause. There's a long list of things that'll cause night sweats. So, yeah,
Exactly.
the so you weren't feeling good, but you were also young and you were, as you tell it, you were leading a life that sounds really, I mean, for somebody who's 29, very healthy. You were moving your body, you were
Yeah.
running marathons, you were following the instructions that, you were following the instructions. So what went through, tell, you can, in a, like, I don't want to make this like a dramatic question, but when you think back to that time, if you had to pick like 3 to 5 words to sort of describe your experience and your feeling state when they come back and say, this is stage four lymphoma. Like what would those words be?
Great question. I would say shocked, relieved, confused, scared, And this is a really strange one, and I don't know why it's coming to me, but I have to say it because it came to me twice and I didn't say it the first time, and I would say excited.
So that's really interesting. Do you think that's because it was answering some of, it was closing some loops for things that you had been experiencing? So it's like you had this undercurrent of experience that was not being acknowledged in your life, the IBS, the not feeling good, the swelling. And so, I mean, and I've heard other people say this, it's like initially the diagnosis, even though it's really scary, it closes some loops and it feels like relief. And it's like now we can get to work.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's I th that was really a great answer, and I want to thank you for sharing that with us. So you shared with me on the intake form that this turns your approach to life on its head, which means upside down, right? And so what are some of the things, some of the immediate concrete changes that happened in your life, when you went through this?
The first thing was like, it really, like my whole life, I had been like working towards something, right? Like something external and internal, but always working towards something, like climbing some sort of ladder or reaching for the stars or whatever you want to call it. That's how it had felt for me. And when I got the diagnosis, it was just like something that just brought me entirely into this present, into the present moment. It was just like, that doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. Like, none of this matters if you die. So you can worry about all this other future stuff. You can work towards things all you want. But right now, it just felt like the universe was asking me to just be present with what was
Okay.
happening in that moment. So yeah, that was one of the biggest shifts, was just like really reining it in, like all of that energy, just really reining it in and going inwards with it, really just sitting with myself. I had been going to meditation here and there, but I started spending way more time. There was a Buddhist meditation center in my neighborhood that was walking distance. And it was just like a quiet space where you could go and sit, and there were books and a lot of silent meditation, like just walk-ins. You could just go in and sit for an hour and leave. And so I would just spend a lot of time there almost every day. I feel like I would go there and just sit and just be present.
Wow.
Yeah, that was one of the biggest things. And I would say that was the foundation, or like that opened up this conversation between me and like whatever you want to call it, higher self, God, the universe. Like I just started talking to it because I didn't know what else to do because nobody I knew had ever had cancer. Nobody I knew personally.
Yeah.
I knew some people, but they were already dead. Sounds
Sure.
bad.
'Cause you were
You
young.
know, I
Yeah.
was young,
You were young.
exactly. Yeah, so it just kind of felt like all of a sudden I was in my own world, and I just let myself like be in that space.
That's amazing. And also, I think you did decide to not finish this degree. So
Oh,
you
yeah.
did, you pivoted in. So I think that that's a, I'm gonna lead you there. That's, I just like, we did make that change. We're like, yeah, enough of this. Something else is gonna happen. So I'm gonna admit that as a person, I fall into the category of people who believe, who feel that cancer is scary. I'm older than you are. So I know people who've lost the battle to cancer. I know people who have lost people they love to different types of this disease, and also people who are living with it, like either in treatment or in remission. Is it okay if, before we go on, if I ask you where you are in this process, your health now?
Yes, I call myself cured. I know the doctors wouldn't necessarily say cured. They would say in remission. I don't know for how long they would say that, but I've been cured since 2019, actually.
Okay. So, and did you engage in like a traditional Western course of treatment? Did you go through all of the things that they do? You did a
I didn't.
biopsy. Yep. Okay.
I didn't want to, but I did.
I think that it is. I don't know. I don't even know what. I mean, I know people who look at it, and it's one of those things. It's just like it's, you got to look at the decisions and make whatever the best decision it is for you.
Yeah.
But the treatments are, they do not look, as an outsider, they do not look like they're enjoyable. And unfortunately, they don't come with a guarantee.
Exactly
So
right.
that is some scary stuff. That is some scary stuff. Let's talk about support. Okay, so I'm gonna guess that when you say I'm dropping out of college at Harvard, my PhD program, maybe a few people in your family were like, I don't know, Pooja. But anyway, who did you have around you for support when you were getting this diagnosis and making these decisions?
So I told you like I would go and sit, and I felt like this might sound radical. It probably does sound weird to some people for sure, but I felt like this cancer, like because I was sitting so much with myself, I felt like it came for a reason, and I felt like it was telling me things. That's why like you need to stop what you're doing, and you're going to be fine. You're not going to die. You need to redirect. Like you're not on the right path for you. That's the message that I felt in my body when I sat with cancer, which is why I ultimately, yes, decided to drop out of my program. And more immediately, before I made the decision to drop out, more immediately, I just like shut it all down. I was like, I just told him, like, I have stage 4B. I'm just not going to be coming to class. I'm not going to be doing these things right now.
My
And then
priorities have shifted. I
I
will not be there for
was
office hours.
like, bye. So I just completely focused on myself and just let myself. I had never done that before, actually, in my life, is just taking a complete, just an opt out of everything and just putting myself first. But I really gave myself permission to do that. And yes, ultimately I dropped out. And you asked for support about support. And the thing is, when I dropped out, I had been cleared of the cancer when I officially dropped out. And I decided to move from Boston to San Diego, like right before that. And yeah, my family, they were mostly up in arms because they were just like, you're cured. Like, what's the problem? Like, shouldn't you be happy that you're cured, and shouldn't you just go about your life as it was before? But like, I could sit down with people for days and talk about the realizations and the experience I had during that time when I was living with it, the types of conversations I had with other people who had really late stage diagnoses. I met so many like amazing people living with cancer at that time. And it's such an intense environment, just like being in the hospital all the time. It's so heavy and also very confronting. And so much changed, so much more than I can explain even on this, podcast. And so, yeah, support was me, myself, and I. When I moved to San Diego, I had a few good friends who lived in other parts of the states, like old friends, or who were like, you got this, like you do you, girl. Like we don't get it, but like we'll support you. We don't get it, we'll support you. But the thing is, I met so many new people along the way that I call like earth angels, because these new people I was meeting, they were teaching me new things. They were showing me, oh, this isn't weird. Like people, I live my life this way or whatever, And so I met a lot of new people. But I did let go of a lot of people during this time as well, or like a lot of people also fell away.
Well, it sounds like it was a very intense time, and it required a lot of focus, and that does happen. So there's a part two of the support question, which is, when you think back, it sounds like, if I was, as an outsider, it sounds like you did an excellent job of creating a new support network as you went through this. And so then there's a part two of this question, which is, now that you're through it, you're on the other side, if you were to look back and say, the support that would have been very helpful for me would have been this. And this is not to judge what your experience is, but if there's somebody out there that listens to this who is in a similar situation, it's like if I could have found this, I think it would have been helpful.
Well, you know, it's interesting because you just made me think about all these. That's when I first started hiring coaches myself and working with different healers and different coaches and all of that, because I really was like looking around my immediate community and realizing nobody had really navigated these waters that I was navigating, and nobody really that could understand this feeling I had that I was meant to
Yeah.
do something completely different and go on some other journey, go on some journey, you know? I was really at the beginning. That was a death, but it was a beginning of a long journey I took after that. And so, yeah, like the coaches that I had, they really, and like the healers, the coaches, they really held a lot of space for me. And while they may have not gone through the exact thing that I did, they really understood more of the waters that I was navigating, whether it was something spoken or unspoken. And I guess, did you mean, do you want something more specific of
No, I
like
think
what
that's
type of
it.
support?
I think
Okay.
that's it. It's like, so you, what would you found it, but what was helpful is having people who met you where you were in the journey and could stand
Exactly.
by you while you were going through the experience you were having, as opposed
Exactly.
to, yeah. So is that
Oh,
okay?
I have one more thing. There's something about like death and grief, and other emotions that might come up when death comes to our doorstep,
Right,
that
anticipatory grief.
and also the grief of just, let's say, because I changed so much and in ways I wasn't really even ready to explain at that point or could necessarily put into words, there was a lot of grief around just, there's so much grief. I mean, the people that I had lost along the way, my own self that has my own old identity. I didn't really care for things like Harvard or I didn't really care for all the things I used to care about. Like there were so many things that changed. And yeah, so anyways, somebody who could meet me in those emotions and who wasn't afraid of sort of going deep on some of those topics, that was also essential for me.
I can see that. I can absolutely see that. And I'm glad that you found those. Okay, so in a minute,
Okay.
we're going to do the final questions. But this was an enormous change. And sometimes, I talk to people about small changes. This is obviously very dramatic. It's not easy. It's not hard at all to understand how somebody would look at what you went through it would make a profound impact on their life. Tell people about what you do now and how they can find you online. So like, what tell us about your business, what you do, how you shifted, where you are today, and how they can find you online.
Okay, the short story is after I
The
moved to
short
San
story
Diego,
long.
this could be, I'm actually sharing this story on stage next week
Okay,
for the
great.
first time. So I'm excited. Yeah, it's going to be both the it's all the way from where we started, you and I, to where we're now ending. And the short version is after I moved out to San Diego, I was really on this mission to follow my heart and let go of like overthinking, people pleasing, all of these themes. There were so many that were from this past version of me. And so I was on a very intuitive journey, and that sent me to a lot of different places. So and the intention behind this journey was really my own healing. I think I still had a lot of questions, even though the cancer went away. I had a lot of questions about like what was going on with my body all those years, and I felt like there was something deeper underneath some of these physical symptoms, and I wanted to heal, and I wanted to also just experience life, and just trust myself and just live. So there was this dual thing, but yeah, I went to Mexico first. And then I actually was sent guided to the Amazon rainforest, and that's where I met my partner, my now partner, and did a lot of healing work there, and ended up living there later, a couple year a year later, yeah. And so during all of this time, like my business and my work and my services, they were really evolving pretty quickly, like and with me as I was evolving and learning and integrating, they were evolving. And so I started my life coaching business 5 years ago. What is it, 2025? Yeah, 5 years ago. Pretty like around the time I quit my program. And I was so excited when I started it because I was like, I've always wanted to do this because I really had. And I hadn't had the words for it because I don't think life coaching existed when I was like a child. But
And it's not a great description. It's not like
no.
it's like a set of words that we use that just is like it's like a holding container that can mean so many
So
different
many
things. That's a
things.
terrible description, but we use it anyway. I
Yeah.
just I'm trying. I would love to have been a fly on the wall in your parents' living room when they were like, you drop out of your PhD program, you survive cancer, and now you're gonna be a life coach. I bet that if I write a movie, there will be a skit. That will be a skit.
It's funny for sure. And yeah, there's a lot more you and I could talk about. Maybe we'll have to do another one of these, because there's a lot more twists, but I can't share them now. So anyways, what I do now, I call myself an authenticity coach, which I like because it is a little bit more specific than a life coach. And I basically work with people who have checked off a lot of their boxes, that society or modern society might ask us to or have programmed us to, and are they're ready, they're not feeling fulfilled with their life, and they're ready to make a change, whether that's healing their relationship with money, whether it's following their heart and going on a wild adventure like I did to find the love of their life, whether it's creating the space for them to step into their gifts and their talents and share them in a way that makes them feel energized and fulfilled, whatever it is, we work in that space. So it's a gift, this work. And I'm an intuitive healer as well. So I integrate in my coaching programs, I integrate, I'm a psychic medium, so I integrate intuitive readings whenever they feel like the right time for that. And also healing work with some plants. So it's all integrated into my program. But yeah, that's what I do now.
That's amazing. All right. And so, do you have a website? Or I know you gave me a link, which is
Yes.
to a group of, so I'll put that in there. But do you have a website you want to shout out?
Sure. My website's pujabakai.com. Just my
And
name.
yeah, exactly. And I will put the link in so that everybody will have that. You have a fantastic offer for the audience, which is a booking a free session, which has a $500 value, which is an amazing offer. So there's a link in the show notes and also in the email that goes to the subscribers at imperfectadulting.com. It's the best way to get those links is to be on that email list. So do that. Thank you for sharing that very generous gift with the audience. That is very, very nice. All right. So now, fun times. I'm going to ask you three questions, not at all related to cancer or any of the things we've talked about today, just for fun. The idea, woo-woo. All right. Are you ready?
Yeah.
All right. I love that you said that you spent time in Ecuador because I did not know that one. I never know what people are going to say when I write the questions because I write them in advance and it totally entertains me when they line up. What, if you had to pick a favorite fruit, what would you choose?
Oh man, well the first oh, there's so many good fruits. The first one, since you mentioned Ecuador, was one of my favorite fruits in Ecuador, which is called a granadilla. It's a
Yeah.
really, do you know what it is?
I think so. It's with is that the little
The
lime
little
or is it
seeds?
yes, that's the little
Oh
seeds,
no.
yeah.
Oh no,
Or a passion fruit.
it's like a passion fruit, but it's
Yeah.
sweet. It's
Okay, yes.
only sweet. But yeah, I would also have to throw mangoes in there because my homeland, India, is, I mean, the most delicious mangoes to die for. And that's it. I know these
All
are
right,
quick
those are good.
questions.
No, but that's so when the time that I went to Ecuador, I loved it because every day there were fresh fruits and I would ask them what they were and they would give me the Spanish name for the fruit and I would not know ever what necessarily it meant. And I live in
There's one
Miami.
more.
Okay, go for it.
Did you try pitaya when you were there?
I don't know, what is it like?
It's a dragon fruit.
Oh, yeah. So dragon fruit I love, but only when I'm in Central and South America. Because if I buy it
Exactly.
in Miami, it doesn't have
Here
the
it
same
tastes like,
flavor.
yeah, if there's no flavor.
in Costa Rica, in any place you can just scoop it out, and it's so deliciously sweet. Just
Yes.
really spectacular, really spectacular. And we, so I have never had, I've never been to India, so I've never had Indian mangoes, but it's like people are so fiercely protective of their specific mangoes.
Exactly.
And so here in Miami, we do the green mangoes with tahini on them, so like it's a, but and also the sweet mangoes. Anyway, there's a lot of
So
mango is a
cool.
whole thing. Mango is a whole thing. I love it that way. Okay, very good. All right, do you have a favorite board game that you like to play with friends or family?
Not at the moment, but I would have to say, if I had to pick right now, I would say Taboo.
Okay. Oh, that is a fun game. I haven't played that in a really long time. That is a really fun game. Okay, very good. I'd forgotten about that. Okay, very good. If you travel, which I didn't know if you traveled or not when I wrote these, do you prefer to drive, fly, go on a boat, or take a train? What would be your preference?
Ooh, I've done so much flying in my day and my time here on Earth. And right now I'm in a driving season, so I'm gonna go for boat because I
Okay.
have not traveled by boat
All
before, and
right.
I would love to do that.
That is so good. That's it, Pooja. Thank you so much for being an amazing guest on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adultier adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.